We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
This is the WEEI Roundtable.
Who the hell are you? What the hell is Kiefer Madness?
Shut up!
Get to the point.
Stuttering.
Featuring Dale Arnold, Lou Merlone, Mike Mutnaski, and Christian Fourier. The WEEI Roundtable is brought to you by Northeastern University DeMoor McKim School of Business. Now broadcasting from Jake and Joe's in Waltham. The Roundtable on WEEI.
I have no idea who the hell thought this was a good idea. Oh, never mind. He's sitting right over there. Forget I said any of that stuff.
No, you can say it.
We're live from Jake and Joe's in Waltham for the WEEI Roundtable, brought to you by Northeastern University DeMoor McKim School of Business. We've sort of shuffled the deck a little bit. Lou and Christian, stay where they were
boys.
A moment ago. But you'll get to talk now because Glenn's sitting over there with
Zarbon.
Look at that.
He's doing shots already. So he knows that he's going to be done for only an hour. 1 hour, so he completely monopolizes the conversation to the point where we just turned our microphones off. Like, we're done. Don't feel like dealing with it. And yet, there he is, quiet as a church mouse, not saying anything. Look at him. Not talking. What is it about the microphone?
He's waiting for the food. Mike Mutnaski joins us as well.
Afternoon. How are you, boys?
Great. How are you?
Excellent. Let's go. Baseball,
I was listening
playoffs.
With interest to the only major leaguer on our air staff as talking earlier today. And I thought you were very eloquent talking about the pressure you felt playing every time you ever played, because you played once a week. If you took an 0-for-4 and booted one through the wickets, you were going to go to Pawtucket or something.
Yeah,
that's pressure.
Wait,
you played every, 6 days also?
Yeah, about.
Oh, he's just like a football player.
Same thing.
That's
true.
What the hell was I worried about? We were referencing Drellick's article. Yeah. I know Mutt, you guys had him on this morning.
Evan Drellick, he's a crazy person.
And my takeaway was not only are those – we'll get to those other two guys, Porcello and Price, in the article – was that Evan Drellick has no idea what pressure is or why it's different. He doesn't understand it. And we were talking earlier about in 99 when we were down 0-2 and I was told that I was going to start game three against the Indians, and they had a Hall of Fame lineup that had speed and power. And I'm thinking they're like – I went home at night and I'm playing mind games with myself all night, all morning, going into that game while the game is going on. The pressure was something I've never felt in my life. You know, and I played, like I said, every 6 days I play, I had pressure. If I didn't play well, I got sent down. And to think that it's just, well, you play big games in September. You know, in Yankee Stadium in April, Yankee Stadium in September is the same thing. And you know, this is a big game. It just tells me that you have no idea that come playoff time, and you watched that game last night, there's so much time between pitches that your mind can play so many tricks on you, and you add so much more pressure because it's not a fast-paced hockey game. You know, it's not a team sport. Everyone's going to do their thing in football. It's individual. You make an error, you suck. You know, you go up there and give up 5 in the first, you're done. It's so individualized. There's so much pressure. And it just – it was mind-boggling to think that the way he was expressing, you know, pressure in the regular season too. No, it's not even remotely close to the postseason.
Yeah, and the fact that, you know, Porcello and Price – you know, talking about, like, the question was, like, are you scared?
What's he going to say?
Yeah, nobody's going to
say that. I am shaking in my cleats right now.
I'm so scared to take the wrong word.
But are you
– wrong question. Do you feel pressure?
Yeah.
Well, I wouldn't
be lying if
you said that. Do you doubt yourself? Are you, you know
– No, because not even the Knicks. I would say the question I would ask, and Porcello actually mentioned it in one of his quotes, about being weak. He's like, that's not being weak. To me, I sit there and go, all right, nobody's scared. So what's the difference? So why do you choke under the pressure? Well, are you mentally weak? Can you not handle the situation? Do you talk yourself out of pitching well because you allow yourself to be influenced by the outside noise, right? So to me, because the guys who – so is Curt Schilling more mentally strong than Rick Porcello or David Price?
Absolutely.
Yes.
Okay, yes, it is, because there's proof. He was in a big situation. He was hurt. He was that. He delivered. He didn't let it affect him. And I would say, all right, maybe these guys think about it too much. So go see a psychologist. I don't know, a psychiatrist, whatever, to talk you out of it.
The track record is there now for Price, because if you take the first year out, he pitched rookie for Tampa Bay, came out of the bullpen, you know, it was great against the Red Sox. Take that year out. Since then, He's made 10 appearances, 9 starts, and in 12 starts, and he's given up runs in 10 of those 12. So 10 of the 12 times he's taken the ball on the mound as a starter in the postseason, since that one rookie push, he's given up runs. And he's given up multiple runs, I think, in 7 of those. And so at some point, there's enough evidence there to tell you, yes, he's absolutely affected by the pressure. And Curt Schilling gets better when the pressure is there. John Lester gets better. We would go through all the athletes that are better in the postseason. He's not one of them, and I don't know how you don't spell it out as the pressure affects David Price. Yeah.
There are a number of reasons why we think Tom Brady's the greatest quarterback who ever lived. One of them is what you just said, Mutt. When the moment is biggest, he plays better. He plays better than most guys do. His fourth quarter comebacks, his game-winning drives, late in games. He can focus when the pressure is greatest on the biggest stage in the world, in the Super Bowl.
David
we saw
Ortiz.
It happen twice. David Ortiz, another guy.
Good example.
I know that the sabermetricians say you can't quantify clutch, and fine. They can't. That's their problem.
I disagree.
I know what I see.
Yeah.
You know what you see. You guys know who's clutching,
who
isn't.
And to your point, you know, because two guys you always reference saying, you know, it took them a while to get over the hump in the postseason, Roger Clemens, Randy Johnson.
And then they did, though.
Yeah, they did. However, while they were struggling to get over the hump, like I was looking at Roger Clemens' first 8 starts, Randy Johnson's first 7 or 8 starts, you know, where they were struggling in the postseason, Randy Johnson had a 3.18 ERA in those starts. Roger Clemens had a 3.17 ERA in those starts. So when they went 7 innings, 3 runs, it wasn't what we were used to because they were so dominant. They didn't have too many 4 2/3, 5.
Well, Price's almost
5
6.
Innings, 5.
It's almost 6 ERA.
That's what I'm saying. So it's not like, well, those guys struggle too, and talent sometimes takes over. Well, they maybe weren't themselves, but they were pretty damn good and still losing games. This guy can't get out of his own way.
So here's the only other theory, and I think it was Ken Rosenthal who said somebody, one of the scouts told him last year that when it comes to playoff time, David Price doesn't change anything, does exactly what he does in the regular season. I'm going to pitch my way. I'm not going to change my approach. And the thought was in the playoffs, and you tell me if this is right, Lou, batters and teams offensively are more well-prepared for a pitcher.
Yes.
And if you don't match that, you can get beat the way David Price is. That's the only non-pressure thing I've heard that makes any sense with Price, that he doesn't put any extra prep into a postseason game.
If you're predictable, right? You're pitching on one side of the plate.
Yeah.
Yeah, but, you know, you always want to do what you do best, though, you know, at
the
same
point. Yeah, I wouldn't change things up either.
Yeah, but there would be scouting reports on certain guys. I'm going in as David Price. Like, how's this guy get me out lately? And is he going to do it again? Okay, I'm going to not let him do it again, or I'm going to look at what he's done recently. So I still think you should stick with what you do well.
See,
but I think it comes down to more execution. Like he tries to stick with what he does well. He just doesn't go out and execute in the postseason. Sometimes it's just four runs in one inning.
Yeah,
like we saw in Baltimore their last outing.
Yeah, because when I look at it as far as, okay, you're not changing anything. Okay, fine. As far as mechanically, you're not going to change anything. You know, your routine before
your
the game.
Prep,
you're not
going to do the same.
Yeah, but so, okay, so I'm thinking, okay, well, so what's the difference between a regular season game and like a Super Bowl, right? Like, you can't rest between any play. Like, every play is so crazy important, right? So in a regular season game, yeah, I may sleepwalk. You know, I may miss a block. I may drop a pass. And I'm like, oh, well, you know, I also have the rest of the game, but I also have the rest of the season to make up for it so people don't remember it. But in a big game, a World Series, Super Bowl, every play has such importance that just keeping yourself into it is exhausting. So, like, if you win it, you're excited, so the adrenaline's pumping. You don't realize how tired you are. But 2 days afterwards, you're looking back going, holy crap. Like, I'm exhausted just by mentally staying into it. Like, your story about, like, how you were playing in that game and you were singing because you didn't want any bad thoughts to come into your head. So
I
you're trying to create some sort of diversion.
Because if I stayed silent.
Did your teammates think you were nuts?
The umpire did at times.
I could have.
But, I mean, In that setting, you know, if I didn't occupy my mind, like I would be like, oh Jesus, left Lofton's up. He's gonna hit that slow roller. I gotta charge it. Viscell, same thing. Robbie's, oh, here comes Tommy. Jesus, Manny's gonna hit a ball down my freaking throat. You know, David Justice, Travis Fryman, and it just, I had to erase those thoughts. So for me, that's what I did. I would go out there and sing, you know, or just to myself because, and it would just turn into like just playing, you know, because it kind of get me in a little bit of a rhythm. It's so different. You know, in those pressure spots, you know, when I heard David Price, the question, are you scared? He said, no, hell no. Hell no. No,
hell
never. Hell no,
no.
Never. It reminded me of Manti Te'o when they asked him, do you like women? And he said, oh, do I like women? Oh, do I like – oh, do I – oh,
far
do
from
I
it.
Oh, every
far,
one of them that you see here, I like all of them.
Oh, far from it. Do I love women? And it sounded like the same thing from this guy, almost like scared. No, never.
Far from it. Far from that.
And we know what Price does when the game gets tough, regular season, postseason. He stands on the mound for 35 seconds between pitches. He starts thinking about it.
Awful pace.
The pace gets to an absolute, you know, Josh Beckett-esque crawl, and he's affected by it.
All right, so tell me – all right, that's been his history. I understand. I've seen it. You've seen it. We've all read about it. How do you get over that? How do you change from that storyline to the storyline like Randy Johnson finally, you know, is unhittable in a World Series? Well,
to me, my key of the game one and game two for him is the offense. Pressure's on them. Give the man a 3-run lead. Give the man a 4-run lead. Make sure Ryan Brazier or Matt Barnes don't come in a 1-game lead because then they're afraid of giving up the solo shot, and it's ball one, and then it's ball two, and then it's curveball ball three because they don't want to give up a solo shot. Have those guys come into the game 7-2. You know, have David Price up 3-0 early after two. Same with Sale. So I think the offense can alleviate a lot of this pressure that maybe this pitching staff will be under.
Yeah, I saw this stat on Luis Severino. Not that it applies to this particular game and these guys, but you look at what Severino did last year against Minnesota, how quickly he was pulled. But this season, he's 13-0 with a 1.84 ERA when the Yankees are leading after the first inning. So you talk about what can you do to kind of shake yourself out of it. Okay, first of all, hopefully your buddies give you a little support, right? Because I think the little incremental increments of success will ultimately convince you that, oh, yeah, I can do this. Oh, yeah, this isn't that hard at all. Oh, what was I worried about? No big deal. So to use that as an example, you know, having 1-2 runs, and then now if you do screw up, you're not ultimately going to screw the entire process, right? So you give up a dinger, you give up whatever, you have a bad inning. At least it wasn't completely – just sabotage the whole team because it's your fault because of the pitching – I feel like it's different than a football game where you're really relying on, you know, 10 other guys. Like, you can be single-handedly be responsible for ruining everybody's year. Everybody. And the pressure of that, I think, creates some issues with guys.
The only equivalent to that, what you just talked about, might be a goaltender in hockey, where the whole team could play their ass off and you give up a couple of bunnies and the next thing you know, you're going home.
Yeah.
That's the only other pressure that I think is like what you're talking about with a starting pitcher.
See, I worry about, like, you know, that one – you see that game last night, 1-0. You know, if it's 0-0, you know, Happ and Price, you're sitting there going, oh, you got to get him some runs. Because I worry about a pitcher's mentality of that solo home run can burn me. You know, same thing with the bullpen. Or a leadoff triple, I can't let this guy score. Because when you have that mentality of – A solo shot can burn me, or say a leadoff triple. I can't let that run score. That's when I start walking everybody. So instead of saying man on third, you know, we're up 3 runs, whatever. Here you go. Sack fly, fine. It's 3-1. Who cares? But when it's a 0-0 game in the fifth, I got a leadoff triple. Now I'm going for the strikeout before I even get the 2 strikes. Now I walk a guy. Now it's first and third. You know, now I got to get a ground ball. I got to get out of the city. Now I walk another guy. And next thing you know, you're afraid of giving up one, you've given up 4. You know, so that fear of that 1-run solo shot can burn you, or giving up 1 run can burn you, sometimes can mess with a pitcher so badly he can pitch himself into huge jams.
And I think that first inning is going to be so important, where they're the top of the first, Saturday night, Fenway Park. I think back to that Yankee game where he came out after the first, gave up all those runs, and the hand was tingly. I think the pressure that first inning, the runs he gave up there, I think it got to him. I think for him on Saturday night, he's got to have a clean first inning, Dale. He's got to get through that first. Because if he gives up a couple of runs there in the first, I think he has a huge chance to unravel because we've seen it. With David Price especially, it unravels real quick with him.
Well, we've talked about David Price. Let's talk about your concerns about Friday night starting pitcher when we come back. It's our baseball roundtable. We're live, Jake and Joe's in Waltham. It's brought to you by Northeastern University,
clapping.
DeMore McKinney School of Business.
Oh,
thank you.
Jazz.
I was clapping. Glenn's on his third shot. So
we'll be back in just a couple of minutes. Sports Radio, WEEI.
Let's get you back to the WEEI Roundtable. Broadcasting from Jake and Joe's in Waltham with Dale Arnold, Lou Merlone, Mike Mudnatsky, and Christian Fourier on WEEI.
So, Alex, Chris Sale throws flat ground Monday, right? I think bullpen Tuesday. You're talking a lot about having all the cameras there. And we referenced that Alex Speer article last week about the extension. I'm curious, what were the results? Was there velocity? How intense was this bullpen? And what did you see from Chris Sale?
Actually, he's going back out there today. He's on his way to the mound. Yesterday, obviously, as you know, the facilities here are great, you know, and we got so much room in the batting cage to do all the fancy stuff. But yesterday was good. It was about mechanics, and now he's going to go out there. He feels that, you know, he wants to feel the mound over there in the bullpen, so he's on his way there. So as soon as I'm done with you guys, I'm sprinting to the bullpen.
Manager Alex Cora on earlier this afternoon with OMF. Did that set off some alarm bells for you?
Well, a couple things.
It strictly just weather? I mean, it was crummy. You don't want him out there on a wet mound.
So, but he still threw inside the mound.
But supposedly they said the mound didn't feel the same. And
yeah, but one thing is that, you know, maybe a flat ground to try to fix some mechanics, try to get a feel for that, try to implement it with all the video cameras, watch video after that mound trip Tuesday inside, and then try to go outside in a short bullpen Wednesday and try to execute, you know, and get ready for Friday's start. I think the one takeaway is, okay, they're working on things. Obviously, we knew that. But if health was a concern, I don't really think it should be. I mean, you threw Monday on flat ground.
You just threw 3 days in a row.
Yeah, Tuesday on a mound. Maybe you didn't have the right feel, so I want to throw it again on Wednesday. If the shoulder is sore or hurting, you're not going to do that 3 days in a row to get ready for Friday. So that's a good sign.
Here's what I'm relying on is in the immediate aftermath of the first injury, people around Fenway Park that are close to the team were saying that if this were a big game, big spot, Chris Sale would have pitched through it. And I heard that from multiple people around that first time. And so he came off the DL against the Orioles, and his velocity was awesome. 98, 99, struck out 12 or 5 innings, and then they backed off him again. And if I base it on my first opinion that they have now babied him now for the last couple of weeks, his mechanics got messed up, and he's good to go on Friday. That's what I'm hanging my hat on, because if he's not right, forget it. They're not winning, whoever it's the A's or Yankees, they're not winning the series. But I go back to that original thought that I heard, that he was pissed he had to go on the DL, missed time, and he thought he was okay, and they really just babied it, then I think he's good to go on Friday. That's what I'm hanging my hat on.
Did you put much stock in the Alex Speer piece about, you know, the release point and how it was almost a foot closer to the pitching rubber than it had been earlier?
Yeah, the direct correlation to velocity.
Yeah.
But my
ball
fear
gets to you that much quicker.
My fear on that is just maybe it is mechanical, but maybe his shoulder's not allowing him to get the extension. You know, because there's fatigue there or restrictions there or something like that, you know. And so, yeah, hopefully it is. It's just mechanics. We won't know until the first inning. I mean, he comes out again throwing 89, 90, four-seamer in the first inning. How are you going to feel on Friday? You know, I just want to see. I mean, we saw him at 94, right, in April and May, 93, 94, and he had great numbers. It's just that we were teased in June and July with consistently throwing the ball 97, 98 and blowing guys away and winning a Cy Young, you know, before he got hurt. You good?
I'm good. I got to stop watching the videos up on the big screen over there. Like Shakira and Britney Spears
and young Christina Aguilera. While we're sitting
yeah, see?
Look at this guy. So here's when you go back to David Price, all right, so I heard you guys talking about this Tom Verducci article.
Jerry was talking.
Well, you're part of the show, so you were probably
Jerry's
talking
a
about
Verducci
also.
Guy.
Okay,
yeah.
Is he?
Yes,
you're not
time.
A Verducci
well, he
guy?
Loves Tom Verducci.
So this one stat that I saw, David Price is number one. And this stat, when it comes to, I guess, your insecurities and how you look at yourself and how you think you can measure up with other guys, other pitchers, when you look at this with David Price, 86 pitchers have started at least 9 postseason games. Only one of them has never won a game.
Ooh, let me guess.
Hold on. A young kid in the front. Oh, who is that?
David Price.
David, you are correct.
Amazing.
Circle gets a square.
Boom.
You can get out early for lunchtime.
There you go.
That, to me, that stat alone, you can't run from that stat. You can't say, hey, I out of the bullpen. No. To me, that is like the stat of the year. You're telling me 86 guys are better than you? 86 freaking guys that pitch in the postseason are better than you.
At least one game. Yeah.
At least one game. You can't win one? Like, I almost feel like we're downplaying how bad it is.
And that's why the Friday start for Sale is so important, because that lingers on Saturday.
Yeah.
Like Chris Sale better be healthy, and he better be that guy, because that lingers in a game two, down 1-0 to the A's.
I still think that, like, some of, you know, the starters, but the most important pitchers on this staff in that first round could very well be Nathan Eovaldi in game one, if he's got to come in the fifth because Price, you know, Sale doesn't have it. It could be Steven Wright and Erod. You know, if they come in game two or game three for Porcello, those three guys, to me, are going to be throwing these innings that are going to be 5, 6, 7, 6, 7, 8, whatever it might be, maybe 7, 8. Like, those three guys, to me, are very, very important. What I'm scared about is, even talking to Alex, is like, you know, if we can get an inning out of them, if we can get two innings to get the Barnes and Brazier, that scares the living hell out of me.
See, here's the thing, though. We sit here and we talk about the bullpen. We talk about the starting rotation. You know, we talk about Alex Cora. Like, nobody is mentioning the lineup whatsoever. So are we just going to assume that all these guys are just going to show up and just say, hey, listen, like, nothing happened. Like, the situation is just as important for them as it is David Price, Chris Sale. None of these guys.
They've got a better track record.
But
though.
We saw them do it all year, Dale, right?
Yes,
that was the one consistent
fine.
All year. They scored
Chris
runs.
Sale was consistent.
From beginning to end.
Well,
no, he was.
If he wasn't hurt.
The last 2 months he was invisible.
He was hurt.
Well,
that's
not consistent.
But the last game he has pitched without restriction was July 27th.
Yeah. Last time I saw him, he hit 94 twice, and I was told two things. Six innings, 100 pitches, and let it fly. Or three things. He didn't get any of those in his last start. The offense, in the last week and a half, 2 weeks, been spring training offense, whatever. They played ridiculous.
So do not even. So just, you know, that's your sleep at night pill right there. The fact that, you know, you've seen it before, you've seen it all year. So let's not worry about them whatsoever.
Martinez, you know, my point is, Bogarts, every team is subject to, you know, your hitter hitting a slump at the wrong time. Obviously, that can happen to anybody. I know what this offense can do. I mean, I know I got the MVP. I know I got a guy who's probably third in the MVP. I know that I've got a shortstop with a career year, a left fielder with a career year. I'm not worried about this team offensively. Defensively, pitching-wise, I'm definitely worried. And one thing Alex said about Friday is Sale has no restrictions. Is he just sort of saying that because it makes everybody feel better? Or do you think
what
he actually believes it?
What do you mean no restrictions? What do you mean? Like, listen, don't pitch 100%. Grab it and go. Don't be careful. Don't be nervous.
We're not, you know, like all these starts leading up to this. It's 40 pitches. It's 60 pitches. It's 90. No restrictions.
Yeah, the other thing is, like, you know, in the postseason, sometimes it's really not about pitch count at all, right? I mean, the kid Freeland's cruising last night. He's like 75, and they pull him. So, you know, it doesn't matter to me. It's not like, oh, he can go 110 or whatever it is, because unless he's a seventh inning and he's sitting at 95 and he's still throwing the ball well, and you say, can we get one more out of him? I don't expect that. That'd be nice to see. But so maybe after six innings, he's sitting there, or if he can go six innings and he's sitting on 85 pitches and he's dealing, that might be enough, you know, because it just in the playoffs, you start going to that bullpen, even if you don't trust him. But I think Alex does with some of these guys.
If Chris Sale would tell us the truth, who would he rather face Friday?
I don't know. I don't see how you can't not want the A's. You know, I just – the A's are a very good team. They won 97 games.
Okay, they two starting pitchers.
An outstanding bullpen. They have no starting pitching.
Yeah,
so you
got to right
jump
now
on those guys. They have no starting pitching. So, and their lineup you respect, but I'm sorry. You walk in, Jay Happ's going to throw game one. You know, then Tanaka and Severino game three against Porcello. And Sanchez could DH. You know, they could start Romine behind the dish. And I don't care if he's in a buck 80 or not. I wouldn't be shocked if he hits three bombs in a series.
I'm looking at the lineup.
Judge.
Now. Chris Sale wants this lineup. These are the guys. It's the Oakland A's coming to town Friday. Martini, Chapman, Lowry, Davis, Olsen, Piscotty, Loreno, the rookie, Simeon, Lucroy. I mean, he gets that group versus
McCutchen, good lineup.
Judge,
it's
Hicks, not Stanton, Didi, Andujar, Sanchez.
Yeah, it's not.
He wants to face the A's, right? Yes, it's got to be.
I would assume that.
It's got to be.
And I'm not even talking about the pitching aspect, which obviously they've got two starting pitchers. Fiers isn't even on their roster for tonight's game, for crying out loud. But I'm just talking about Chris Sale. I got to get those guys out. It seems pretty clear to me as well that I can get that A's lineup out before I can get that Yankees lineup out.
I mean, you never want to go there because you don't want to disrespect the lineup because they can light you up. But I just don't know. And maybe in the end, if it is the Yankees, in the end, they win this thing in three or four games, we might sit there and say we just fell in love with the names and the reputation of the guys in the Yankees. The bottom line is it's a flawed team. You know, but while you're in it, if they win tonight, the next 2 days on Friday, I guarantee you're going to be a little more nervous than you would be if you're playing the A's.
No, you'd probably talk yourself into a sweep if the A's come to town.
Yeah, which might be a mistake.
Right. I'm just saying.
But you're right.
By the time you get to Friday night at 7 o'clock or 7:30, you'll talk yourself into, this will be over quick.
Because offense is the scariest thing. So you start looking at that lineup, and you think every time they get two men on, they got a good chance to get a three-run home run. And the A's don't have that up and down their lineup. They've
got
Davis, a couple other guys.
They got Olsen, but they bombs.
It's not the same threat. Now, their bullpen is lights out. And they went out, and unlike the Red Sox, they went out and added the bullpen. That's why that list you met of Verducci, top 10 pressure guys postseason. He should have put Dombrowski somewhere on that list.
Because the Red Sox.
If it ends up flaming out because of the bullpen, you are going to get fired Dave Dombrowski calls for a good portion of the beginning of the offseason.
You might get the calls, but you're not getting him fired.
You're right, because John Henry's invested in him. But it'll be another time where he is on his track record did not build a bullpen, if it ends up being that Bregier and Kelly and all these guys fail in a big spot and they're out in the ALDS or ALCS and don't get to a World Series,
if that's
it is
going
to be directly on Dombrowski.
I mean, the last 2 years, I wouldn't put on
never
a bullpen.
Never got there. No.
Never got there. To that point,
but
right?
They're so good this year where you think the bullpen might end up being a deciding factor in a 5 or 7-game series.
The July 31st trade deadline, I believe there was 17 teams that were still in the hunt. 16 of them improved their bullpen. One team did not.
Cleveland really improved.
One is going to rely on Nathan Eovaldi.
So
did Houston,
a big spot. Yeah. I mean, two teams that needed to.
Bezier.
Went out and did. One team. Boston. Why? Well, it's going to be hard to find anybody better than Ryan Bregier throwing a ball as hard as Matt Barnes and all these other guys. And it's like, okay, they're good, but you could add one more, just new blood. Maybe you can help add to it.
Why is Alex so hesitant to say, Eovaldi's my game four starter or Rodriguez is my game four starter?
I think it has to do with, like, Oakland got a little different lineup. And
would be Rodriguez if it was Oakland.
Yeah, and there's some platoon situations where I think they would almost rather have the righties in those platoon situations hit in games as opposed to the lefties who maybe have more pop. Chris Davis has reverse splits if you just look at him.
Right.
Lowry, whether it's lefty or get him at right-handed side, but I think it's more they've gone to some platoon situations at two or three positions. They've changed a little bit where I think he might want the righties in that lineup as opposed to the power lefty.
You know, to your question, like, who would Chris Sale want to face? And Chris Sale is kind of nutty. You know, he's like this, you know, he's just a tough guy, right? And, like, he wants the toughest situation. He's going to battle through any injury. And the tough guy would say, you know, I only want to pitch against the best. Now that's the stupid thing to look at when you.
I want to pitch against the worst.
I want to win.
You want to dominate the worst, and then the good guys will eventually show up. It's like the other day we were talking. Well, who would rather see the Yankees or the A's? As a fan, I'm sitting there going, "Oh, I want the Yankees." But no, in the reality, the Yankees are a more dangerous team. Yes, they're a little bit. You know, there's a lot more name recognition. It'll be fun for us to do it, but ultimately, you'd rather deal with the A's instead of the Yankees.
This is hour number one of our 2-hour baseball roundtable. The other guys will be back in here at the top of the hour, and Glenn and Jerry and my partner, Rich Keefe, and they'll all climb in here at the top of the hour. We're broadcasting live from Jake and Joe's in Waltham for the WEEI roundtable. It's brought to you by Northeastern University, DeMore McKim School of Business. We'll continue on here in just a couple of minutes. Sports Radio, WEEI.
Let's get you back to the WEEI Roundtable. Broadcasting from Jake and Joe's in Waltham with Dale Arnold, Lou Merlone, Mike Mutnatsky, and Christian Fourier on WEEI.
I do feel that they found something and he's going to be fine. Obviously, we're going to have to wait till Friday to see if it works. But one thing for sure, and if there's velocity there, if he goes up to 99 or he's throwing 95 or he's throwing 91, he's still a great pitcher. And he showed it, you know, he did it in Cleveland the other day against a great lineup. The other day was a grind. One pitch at the end kind of like changed the whole completion of the game. It was a slider to Adam Jones. So as far as like him competing and his slider and his changeup, they're still good. It's just the separation, obviously, what makes hitters uncomfortable. But he's going to compete, and we're going to be fine with him, you know. And I do feel he's going to go deep into the game, regardless if you're throwing 90 or 99.
Yeah, but I'd prefer 99.
Yeah, no kidding.
That is Red Sox manager Alex Cora's press conference, ALDS press conference over at Fenway.
Almost like he's setting you up. Yep. Hey, you know, if he doesn't have his velocity, guys, I'm fine. He'll still be good.
I mean, there's no question the guy's going to compete.
He's going to spot it. And,
right?
You know,
sure. He's going to compete.
He'd rather die than give in. I mean, I understand that.
That's a problem.
I mean, Alex would be the first one to tell you as a former hitter. I mean, you're facing the guy that throws 98, 99. Like Pedro Martinez went through 97, 98. You look back and you say, how the hell the guys hit him at 96, 97? Because at 91, he still dealt. But he was different. But as a hitter, would I rather face Chris Sale throwing 98 or Chris Sale throwing 92? It's
not even close.
Easy answer. Is he still going to be tough? Sure he is. Will he be as tough if he's throwing 98? No.
And the other thing is that the last time you saw him, the last three times, he's been all over the place.
Yeah.
So,
well, hit two guys in an inning. They just blew my mind.
Yeah, so what makes you think, like, this is crazy because it's like as many games as this team has won, there's still so many, like, there's just, he's still uneasy. Like, for a team this good, you shouldn't be this uneasy. There shouldn't be this unknown about the guy, the most important guy to go out for the very first game has all these question marks. Nobody knows what they're going
to
see.
They're a terrible favorite. Right now, they're 3-1 to win the World Series, the favorite amongst all the teams. I would not bet a cent on that. They have too many question marks for a team that won 100 and some odd games. you're 1,000% right. And I think the only thing
is it fair to say, though, if we were doing this exact same show in Oakland, in New York, in Houston, we'd be saying, oh, look at the question marks on the Astros, on the Yankees, on the A's.
Difference being this team just won the most games in baseball this year. And so they're supposed to have, as Christian said, the least amount of questions, right? When you win that many games, you're supposed to go in and feel good about a good portion of what you have here. I think based on this past hour and all the Red Sox fans that they were asked the question, you feel really good about the offense. And you feel confident that on a Friday night, no matter what team they face, they will score runs. Starting pitching, we just spent an hour on Chris Sale and David Price. Bullpen, we spent 3 months talking about them.
Six.
So two of the three, the offense, starting pitching, bullpen, two of the three, I think, are significant question marks for a team that is 3-1 in the favorite
now,
to win the World Series.
In the offense, you could sit there and say that, you know, position-wise, you really don't know who's at first, second, or third. Now, it's not dire, you know, because I think you've got decent options at all of them. You know, we talked to Alex last week, and it almost sounded like he was leaning to Kinsler at second just because of the defense. He feels it's extremely important to turn double plays, and he's one of the best in the game. But Brock Holt might have been their hottest hitter, you know, in September.
But he's also a nice bat to have off the bench, too.
Sure. And then you got, you know, Pierce, I think, will start against lefties. You got Moreland, who's looked better in the last couple of weeks. And you got Devers, who swung the bat well the last few weeks. You got Nunez coming back from injury. So he's, you know, and again, like I said, they have better options. It's like you have questions at those positions, but it's not like questions at the back end of the bullpen. You know, because no matter who it is, you sit there and say, well, they bring different things, and some of it's positive.
Alex will probably be pinch hitting for the catcher in like the fifth inning.
No question. No question.
He has to.
That's why he's going to carry three. No doubt about it. And that's where Brock Holt might come into play. Or do you go right to Blake Swihart? You know, and you give him a few innings.
See, I think what I would be tempted to do is pinch hit Swihart for Sandy Leon and just put him behind the plate at that point. And then you still got it, you know, your third catcher is still available to you.
The problem they might run into is, say, like Hap goes game one. Let's just say it's the Yankees. You know, and you start Pierce and you start Nunez. You know, so all of a sudden Leon comes up and you start Kinsler. You know, Leon comes up in the fifth inning, bases juiced, one out, and you're looking down and you say, okay, Hap's on the mound. I got Devers. I got Moreland. I got Holt. I got Swihart, who's better from the left side. I got all lefties. You know, and it's like, you know, when I start my right-handed lineup, I don't have a righty to pinch hit for Sandy against Hap or Chapman or whatever, right? Your bench is very left-handed if you start your righties against a guy like Jay Happ. So I wouldn't be shocked if he looks at it and says, you know what, I'm still going to start Devers, you know, against Happ. Just for that reason, maybe have a right-handed bat to go with the two lefties on the bench, and Devers has been swinging it well, and I'm not so sure there really is a split with him as much as there is just don't chase pitches. So it'll be interesting to see what he does with that lefty lineup.
And I said the offense is the one thing that Sox fans feel confident in. I think Alex Cora is also in that category.
Absolutely.
I think Cora, you've mentioned it a bunch of times, Dale, when I've listened. Shaughnessy wrote, you know, rookie of the year or whatever. He's, for first-year manager in Boston, given the amount of pressure on this team, highest payroll to go win, he has been a huge breath of fresh air.
And he hasn't pushed many wrong buttons, has he?
I think there are probably a handful of things, but that's
maybe.
It's not like last year when, in years past, you had a manager who was complicit in allowing guys to get away with things. When the base running was poor to start the year, the carryover from 2017, Cora called it out. When he made mistakes, Cora jokes about it and sort of admits it.
And yeah, quietly, that's been a lot better.
What do you mean?
Base running.
Yeah, oh, definitely. Oh, a lot better.
It's a much better three months. He sat there and said, nothing's changed.
That's why I think they'll beat the Yankees in a best of five, because they will run all over Sanchez and Austin Romine. Mm-hmm. And they will Xander Bogaerts will have four stolen bases in a series against those two guys because they can't defend behind the plate there. And I think Cora gets a lot of credit for that because they not only they fixed it, but lose right, they got better.
So is the only difference between Boone making this Tom Verducci list of the guys under the most pressure, the difference between Boone and Cora is that Joe Girardi went, you know, what, all the way to the seventh game of the ALCS?
Yes. Yep.
And with a team that wasn't supposed to go there. And, you know, Cora taking over a team that got bounced the last 2 years in a row. Is that it?
Yeah, it's
so
interesting.
No pressure for him because less to accomplish.
In Verducci's article, yeah, it was more focused on Boone because Girardi did do that.
Yeah.
A team that nobody thought was ready for that moment during the year, or earlier in the year, he brought him to that moment. The flip side of it, he doesn't have Alex Cora on that list. He has the Boston Red Sox on that list, you know, not the manager. Because Cora took over a team, this group, that has failed the last 2 years in that first round.
Oh, Sox get swept. Cora's got no problems.
You start looking at Dombrowski, and you start looking at this roster and saying, what's the deal? What's the problem? These guys can't pitch in the postseason. You know, and Dabrowski, why don't you improve the bullpen? Again, we got to see how they if they get bounced. Yeah,
how does it happen? You know, yeah. I guess, Cora, there'd be some criticism if there ends up being a game or two where his moves cost it. But if it ends up being the bullpen, then you're right. It's a honeymoon year.
You know, a couple times this year we basically came out and said, yeah, I made a mistake. You know, first time, then the second time.
Jackie Bradley Jr. in left field should have
put up
him
on
in.
Me.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's where it might happen. You know, people say, you know, he makes another one of these mistakes in the postseason. You know, comes out and admits it, and you're like, really? It's a postseason? Rookie manager, right? I mean, that's kind of the only spot where he's probably going to be in heat, because if they happen to lose, I don't know if people will blame him as much as they'll blame the roster in Dombrowski.
Well, also, let's see if he's quick to blame himself in a postseason game as opposed to a regular season game.
He will.
Oh, well, it's my fault. He's just starting sounding like Farrell in a real hurry.
Fellas, it was fun talking baseball with you.
Yeah.
I'm going to go watch a hockey game.
Yeah. Opening night for the Bees.
Opening night for them, too.
Yeah, you guys take off. Have a good
time.
Yeah,
I'm going to go home and watch
some food here and watch these guys do a show.
Second half of the baseball roundtable is coming up here on Sports Radio, WEEI.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.